गणपतिगुं हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणां ब्रह्मणस्पत आनशृण्वन्नूतिभिः सीदसातनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करभावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः रूपं दृश्यं लोचनं दृक् तद्दृश्यं दृक्तुमानसं दृश्याधिवृतयः साक्षी दुर्गेव न तु दृश्यते. Let's start with our meditation now, now that we've reached Nididhyasanam section of this text. So get yourself ready. Always, any meditation you do, taking some time for preparation is very helpful to make the environment, make the mind ready so it can meditate in an easier way. If I just come from somewhere, sit down, want to meditate, it'll be hard without slowing the mind down, preparing a bit. So I take a few long deep breaths. I let my body relax. Let my legs, hips relax. My back is relaxed. Arms and shoulders relaxed. Head and facial muscles relaxed. Let my mind relax. And I can keep my attention with the gentle thread of the breath, helping me to keep the mind more aware. I remain present this way. So in the text, Sri Vidyaranya has pointed out one type of meditation practice he calls samadhi. It's drishya anuvidha savikalpa samadhi. Absorption with the help of perception. So the way this is done now, I don't try to perceive something specific. I don't try to make the mind do anything specific. But something comes up. Maybe I feel the body, something in the body I'm feeling. So very good. I feel some sensation in the body. So instead of just, what does it feel like? My attention goes there and I think about it. I say, whose sensation is that? Who does it belong to? Does it belong to the jiva, to the individual, or to sakshi, the witnessing awareness? Within the light of sakshi, of I, the witnessing awareness, the sensation is experienced, the sensation manifests. It helps to show me I'm the witnessing awareness. I'm aware. Within the awareness, there's something, there's sensation. If I drop that sensation, am I not that same witnessing awareness? Doesn't sakshi remain the same? Maybe something else comes to my attention. I hear some noise, I hear something. Within the awareness, there's hearing. Hearing manifests. Is it more correct to say that I'm aware of the hearing than I am hearing? I'm the one who is hearing the sound coming from somewhere. I'm the one whose hearing is also a thought. Ahankrita, ahankriti vritti, the ego thought. Part of the mind is subject, part of the mind object. But within the light of I, the awareful being, hearing manifests, hearing appears. I use the sensation of hearing, the experience of hearing, to show me myself as the awareful being, just like looking in the mirror. There's hearing, I'm aware there's hearing, meaning I'm aware. When I look in the mirror, it shows me myself, meaning it shows a reflection. I'm not the reflection or the reflecting surface. I'm the one that is getting reflected there. So when I'm aware of the hearing is the mirror, shows me I'm aware. I'm the conscious being. The hearing shows this to me. Similarly, whatever bubbles up in my mind, any thought, any emotion that comes up, I can ask, whose thought, whose feeling is that? The fact that I'm aware of the thought or the feeling means that I'm the drik, I'm the observer. That is drishyam, that's observed, that's object. So I'm something totally separate from that thought or emotion. The thought or feeling is dynamic, it's come, it's going away, changing. I, the awareful being, remain the same, regardless what the content of the mind is at any given point in time. And the thought or feeling, so the experience, the thought or feeling is like a wrapper. The substance is I, the awareful being. I can disregard the wrapper. I'm still there. But I, the awareful being, this can't be disregarded. Just as the mirror can be put aside, but the one who has reflected the mirror will be there regardless if there's a reflecting surface in front of him or her or not. So in this way, any thought, feeling that bubbles up in the mind, any experience that may be there, can help to bring me back to myself as the awareful being. even if the mind has become quiet. I'm aware of the quiet mind. And the quiet mind is within the awareness, showing me that I'm aware. And if the mind isn't quiet, whatever happens to be there can also show me that I'm aware. Shanti, shanti, shanti. So as we've mentioned also, each class we're chanting the first verse, because the first verse is you can call it Sutra Vakya. It gives the essence in something very short, the essence of the text. And then we also said that this section that we're in now got into the Nididhyasana, had that one other verse, which is second, that was the first most important one to know. Second most important one is that other one, which we read a few classes ago, which talked about the viveka between the substance, between Brahman and between the manifest world. That one was saying, asti bhati priyam rupam nama chetyancha panchakam adyatrayam brahma rupam jagad rupam tato dvayam. So two verses we take and we remember from this, these two. Because this one also is saying how these five aspects, right? Satchit Ananda, Namarupa, the existed, pure existence, knowingness or consciousness, the bliss aspect, love aspect, those belong to Brahman, and the other two aspects, the name and form, that's the world. Take away name and form, it's only Brahman. Add name and form, you have world. Same thing, like this. So, and these meditation actually, this one that was recommended here focuses on that. You use the name and form here. We use the name and form, the experience, to show the substance behind it. Like that, just like we gave the example last week, you want to drink the water, right? Then the cup holds the water, right? The name and form shows you the consciousness. So, also, in this section we're doing, these six verses which are talking about the different types of samadhi here. Samadhi meaning absorption. You absorb your attention in something. So you can just take it as meditation here in this context. So it was broken into a few types. It was broken to antar and bahihi. Antar, internal. Bahihi, external. So two types. And then within those was subdivided into savikalpa and nirvikalpa. Savikalpa is using thought, because here, what we did now, we used thought. It wasn't just, disregarding that. Nirvikalpa, without thought, full absorption. When you're fully absorbed, there's no thought left. So two types like this. So again, two and two, so now we have four types. And then the savikalpa with thought was also broken into two. And that one was the drishya anuvidha and the shabda anuvidha, with drishya, with something perceived, which was what we looked into last time we did the meditation. Now, what is perceived is used as part of the meditation. The other, shabda anuvidha, with the help of some words from the scriptures, that's where we're at now. So you have, what is it? Drishyanuvidha, savikalpa samadhi. Actually, antar drishyanuvidha, savikalpa samadhi. Then shabdanuvidha, antar shabdanuvidha, savikalpa samadhi. And antar nirvikalpa samadhi, three. And then same with bahihi, same with external, these three. So within a week or two, we'll be experts at all these samadhis, okay? And nididhyasanam, again, as we said, this is done after you study some, after the sharavanam, so it makes sense. After the samananam, after I've reflected on it, then it makes more sense. Without that, it won't make as much sense, especially the next one we have. What we just did now, it will make some sense even without study, but not as much. But the next step is not going to make sense without having studied. So let's get to that here. We're in verse 25, I see. Asanga Sachidanandaha Swaprabho Dvaita Varjitaha Asmeti Shapta Vidhoyam Samadhi Savikalpakaha. Asanga Sachidananda Swaprabho Dvaita Varjitaha Asmeti Shapta Vidhoyam Samadhi Savikalpakaha. The seeker must contemplate, I am unattached, Sat Chid Ananda, self-luminous, cognizably non-dual. This is called Shabdanuvidha Savikalpa Samadhi, absorption of the mind with the recognition of distinction and mixed with scriptural words. Makes it long and complex, I was planning, but using words from the scriptures, using some textual words for this. So what happens is when you say a word, a word is a label for something, brings something to mind, right? You say table. Right? You say bottle, you say tree, you say ocean. Brings the thing to the mind because they're connected. Name and named are connected. So when something is said, the name comes, the form will come to mind naturally. But now if we say something that you have, you don't know the object, it's just going to not mean anything. Because actually, some words we bring up, we'll say infinite. What form does it bring to the mind? By connotation, it might bring something just because of my connotation. But really speaking, what it will do, it negates. Because anything I can, if I say infinite or I say formless, what it does, it negates the experience of those things. You say formless. Formless may be a little easier. Formless. So the moment you say formless, then all things, the form there, It takes away the form instead of adding something. Because when I say table, it brings a form to the mind. I say, classical music, it brings something to the mind, right? I say, wind, it'll bring also, whether visual, audio, to the mind. So it brings those things. Where when you say formless, it takes away, it scrapes away these parts, these limited parts of the experience. That's what it does, like that. So my guess, again, our Buddhist friends, emptiness, meditate on emptiness, that's saying formless, empty of everything. Again, I'm sure they use it for many other things because, Vedanta, I'm studying now the Buddhist philosophy. But in any case, so what happens then is the words from the scriptures, what they do, we study them, we have shravanam, so it brings more and more attention to what that is, right? The more attention it brings to it, then when you want to bring it to the mind, it'll help to point towards that. Because here's an example. I'll say, we meditated, the awareful being. If I hadn't done Shravanam for some time, we'd say the awareful being, and it would kind of like be, oh yes, I'm a living being, yes. But it wouldn't really mean very much. Yeah, it's me, of course, I'm a conscious being. What is that? It doesn't mean anything to me. But because we're looking into it and slowly, it's called when having the class, when studying these things in this way, in Shravanam, unfolding the text. Slowly unfolds it that within my mind, slowly it gets more sensitized, that it's more clear what's being talked about like this. So then it becomes more and more, slowly more clear, okay, what is that that is being talked about? So my attention can go to that. Or more correctly, my attention, I drop certain things from my attention. It's more removing than adding, really. This is really what it's doing. So this is what happens is, with how this works, how this type of meditation, if you want, works, okay? So like this. And what happens when I remove them in our meditation that we just did, just touched on it slightly there, said, okay, I can remove the what is being experienced. That'll come, that will go. I can remove that. But I cannot remove myself, the awareful being. That's something I cannot remove. It's like, I'll say, okay, clear everything from this room. You can clear all the objects. You can even create a vacuum and empty out the air from it too. But the space, you cannot remove. Impossible to remove the space. So I can remove all the stuff from my experience, nama-rupa, but satchidananda, meaning the conscious being, the awareness, that can't be removed because it's there regardless. So that's how it helps to negate those and bring this, and brings my attention to it. So in this verse also gives some examples here, right? So first it gave asangaha. Asangaha, sangha means attached, connected. Asanga, unattached, right? So talking about the myself as asangaha, okay? So what happens is I, Sakshi, if I were the awareful being, was in any way attached, connected to other things, then Sakshi would have to change. Like the absolute space is there, Newton's space is there, objects come and go, and space isn't touched. That's our experience of it. But unfortunately, Einstein came and skewed the picture. But if we take the Newtonian space, then yes, things come and go, space is not touched. And from our experience, we don't see space being touched by it. Like this. But then what happens if we take Einstein's space, yes, now the space also changing. The space is just also something that will go. It's not the absolute because it's something that is affected. That one can't be the absolute because it's affected by things. Right? So if Sakshi were to be, if you as the witnessing awareness were to really have some connection to what is within the space of awareness, meaning it would have to change too. Because the moment it cuts, one thing has a connection to something, it has limitation, it'll have to change. All these things start coming around. So asanga is unattached. When you have the snake and the rope, does the snake in any way attach to the rope? Does it connect it any way to the rope? Is there any connection between the two? The only connection is an imagined one. There's an imaginary thing there. But really speaking, it doesn't touch it. The rope is never affected no matter what. You know, there's no connection between the two. So this is a similar way. Now what happens also then is, now in my experience as an awareful being, I as Sakshi, I as the awareful being, I'm separate from anything. Nothing can touch me, right? Nothing. But with it, all the things with my experience, are they not within the field of awareness? They're within my field of awareness because we talked about all my experiences that have to be in the mind. Without mind, there's no experience. the mind, every thought, every emotion, isn't that within the field of my awareness? Without I, the conscious being, it couldn't be there. So it's a very interesting thing. And Sri Krishna talks about in Gita, he says, I'm in and through, everything's in me, but I'm not in anything. Nothing. One verse he says, everything here manifests within me. Then next verse he says, I'm not within anything. So suddenly it seems these two things seem to conflict, and then somebody will read it, will say, Sri Krishna's talking nonsense, forget it, I'm not interested. But this is what's being said here. Look at your experience in the dream. I'm something separate. You wake up also, I saw the dream. So the dream just came and went, nothing happened to me. All the exciting things there, whether they were, you know, something I was worried it was a nightmare, or it was so wonderful, I was experiencing wonderful things, whatever it is, I just experienced it, it came, went, it was not a touch to me. On the other hand, though, everything there is within me, but I'm not touched by it, but it's all within me. So from the perspective of I, Sakshi, nothing touches me, I'm separate from everything. Now from the perspective of my whole field of experience, everything is within the Sakshi. So it depends, if you go from the objects of experience, they're all within the Sakshi, they're not separate. So that's why it's untouched by them. Untouched because everything within, but I'm untouched by it. So this is very interesting. And that's how Sri Krishna says he upholds the whole world through his Maya. This is the Maya. Seems that all this thing is pulling me here and there, but really it just appears within me like this. What happens as Sakshi, I'm illumining all the thoughts. So the illumined is just illumining. The sun is in the sky, illumines everything on the earth, untouched by it. But all the light here, everything you see, that's the light of the sun. So all the objects you're seeing, I'm seeing the light. I see all those things, that's the light of the sun. But the sun itself is untouched by them. So all the objects, meaning the color form comes from the sun because the light, but the light itself belongs to the sun, but sun is untouched by it. So Sakshi brings everything to light, but untouched by it. So Sakshi is totally untouched by it. Or the other example for this thing is the actor in the play. The actor brings the character to life, right? Sometimes, like something that I saw, the experienced actor does a very small part. The younger actor does a big part. Even though the young actor has a large part, the experienced actor will stand out in your mind. They did 5 minutes, the other one did 1 hour, but this one stands out in your mind because of that. Because of their depth of experience. That's just aside, doesn't have to do with our main topic. But the actor is untouched by the character, but the character is totally, fully within the actor. No actor, no character. So in this way, it's untouched, unattached by it. It's unattached. So it's a very interesting thing. It seems like a contradiction. But to make it simple at the beginning, we can just say asanga. I as the awareful being am untouched by anything. We took it a step further, and that actually will come more with Advaita when we get to that, when we talk, to show. But if we just say asanga, I as the witness am untouched, but untouched by anything. Everything comes and goes. I as Sakshi am untouched. So that's asanga. Now when we hear more and more asanga, now when I meditate on it, I'm the awareness. A thought came, a thought went. I'm the same awareness, right? I got lost in the thought. I come back to being aware. Oh yes, that time when I lost in thought, if I remember any time within that, wasn't I the same awareness, untouched? I was, I just didn't notice. But if I look back at it, any experience I ever had, it came, went, I, the awareness, was there the same. So I'm asanga, untouched by it. So this is one point bringing up here, right? The asangatvam, and each one of these is I am. It's asangaha, the unattached, sachirananda, swaprabha, which is self-luminous, dvaitavarjitaha, without duality, asmi, I am. So each one of these is I am that, because it's the internal savikalpa samadhi on I look at myself in this light. So it's not, there is some Satchidananda there, some or seeing how I am the unattachment. I am Satchidananda. Now here, an interesting thing here with Satchidananda, when we look at it as myself, from the worldly perspective, from the individual perspective, where I am makes a difference. Where I am in life, where I am physically, I'm at home, right? Or I'm in a very busy place. I'm somewhere uncomfortable, I'm somewhere comfortable, somewhere I like, somewhere I don't like this, right? So where I am really matters, but where I am, what is it focused on? It's focused on Namarupa, right? On the name and form. But here when I see Sat aspect of myself, that I am, that I focus on. Not where I am, that I am. Worldly perspective, where I am makes a difference. Oh, I'm very lucky, I'll go to Arizona, I'll be in ashram in this, this ashram setting here, talks in this. Oh no, I have to go to this very busy place, these things I don't like to do, like that. I'm here and there. But that I am does a change in any of these situations. Right? Doesn't matter. So shifting to appreciating that I am like this. I don't do that because I'm too caught up in where and how and what and all these things. Instead of that I am then. Do I ever notice it? No, I take it for granted like this. And I don't look at the base. If I look at the base then, just like looking at the dream. You look at the dream afterwards and it's a very different thing than being caught up in the dream. Oh, it's just a dream. Because I see in a different light. So here, of course, the dream, I come out of the dream so I can look back at it. Here, yes, all my experiences, I can look back at them. Every experience is momentary. That moment, okay, I get caught up in it. But if I look at all the gamut of experiences, it'll be easier to look also at the experience at this moment. Sat and then chit, right? Then usually I think, what I know. I know this. I'm very curious. I'm going to study more of something. I want to know more about that, right? And I'm very ignorant about this other topic, and my mind doesn't grasp that topic very well. So, okay, so I'm not very good at that. I'll think like this. But here, not what I know, but that I know, right? The fact that I know that I'm a knowing being, knowingness. That's chit. I'm conscious. So I look at the content and the content of the mind instead of what is the base. I'm a knowing, aware for being, knowing. There's knowingness. So this is that shift, because the knowing, right? The specific knowledge in the mind, this one belongs to the Manomaya Kosha, actually Vijnanamaya Kosha, belongs to the mind, intellect, right? Maybe memory, like this. Belongs to Antakarana, the inner instrument. Does it belong to I, Sakshi? If it belonged to I, Sakshi, now Sakshi suddenly has a burden to carry. Doesn't have any burden, it's just aware. Thought is momentary. Specific knowledge is vritti, it's thought. But it's momentary, comes and goes. But the thing is, yes, you'll say, but it's stored in the memory. Memory is also momentary because it's also energy. You know, it can get lost, it can get overwritten or like this. But Sakshi, no, untouched by this. So that is, that I know, not what I know. Then Ananda, very interesting interpretation given for this one, is I love certain things. I love to have Vedanta class, right? I love maybe to eat certain things. I love maybe to do yoga. I love this music. I don't love that music, right? Like this. Now, here it's not what I love, but that I love. Everybody has love within them. And that's their nature, like this. So instead of seeing that I love, we look at the, you know, that I feel joy. The joy is my nature. When I drop everything, I go to deep sleep. Oh, it's so joyful because I dropped everything. So I was there. So I was joy because I dropped all the extraneous things. So this is Satchidananda when I'm looking at myself. Like this. So shifting my attention like to the essence, not to the momentary manifestation, like that. So this is with the Satchidananda, and then it said here, Swaprabha, self-luminous, like this, self-luminous. This was an interesting thing. At first, I didn't understand Swami Ramsurupanandaji was saying, I didn't understand what he was trying to get at, but before I had studied Vedanta for some time. So what happens is when you have the sun in the sky, you have your flashlight, right? It's dark, you can see things. The sun, do you need to take the flashlight to illumine the sun so you can see it? It's luminous. Light is luminous. You don't need something to make the light luminous, right? What do you need for you to be conscious, to be aware? What do you need? What's needed? Nothing. It's choiceless, choiceless awareness. You're aware, you don't have a choice about that. You have a choice about what to do, how to do, where to do, what to do, why to do, like this. All these things, you have a choice, so many choices. They say about an action. In action, you have a choice to do it another way, or not to do it. This is how in the scripture it says like this. So, but to be aware, do you have a choice? What choice do you have in that? So, an interesting thing, the sun is self-luminous, yes, but not completely. Because, first of all, it is dependent on, it's just going to live a few billion years, the poor thing. After a few billion years, it's going to go. So, but also, it's light. The light without the eyes, the light will never be seen. Right? So this poor sun, for it to be luminous, it depends on eyes looking at it. If I don't look at it, never looked at it, it's not illumining anything. But I see, and I'm illumining by the eyesight. So the conscious being is eventually the ultimate illuminer, because what illumines that? You don't need anything to illumine that, but it illumines everything. As the sun illumines everything, you're illumining everything, not dependent on anything else. So in the external world, the sun is given as the example, something that is illumining everything, and that it's luminous. It's natural luminosity. It doesn't need something else to bring to light. Same with I, the conscious being. There's nothing I need to bring it to light. It's self-luminous like this. And the other example, so each one of these, they help to, because self-luminous, it's negating all the other ideas that I have. Oh, I know this, I don't know that, my mind will go like this. Or, I feel limited. What'll happen when I die, what'll happen this? Well, I as the conscious being, self-luminous. It's not dependent. I'm not dependent on any of these situations. These situations will come and go, but I am independent, self-luminous. Nothing can touch like this. So it helps to drop a lot of these misconceptions about myself. And then, last one gave here, after all these, Dvaita Varjitaha has no duality whatsoever, right? So what happens is, again, as the illuminator, the example we're giving at the beginning, which should have probably been brought here instead of when talking about after all, because after you negate many things, easier to talk about the non-duality. Now when we come to here, I say, yes, I'm the awareful being. Everything is just within experience, within my awareness. I'm self-luminous. It's not self-luminous, so everything I experience is within the light of awareness. So every experience is there. It's the light of awareness and nama-rupa, right? That's all, name, form, and I, the awareness. Now, which is the substance? The substance is not the name and form. The substance is Satchidananda, I, the awareful being. The whole dream world is you, the awareful being, with some name and form temporarily added to it. So same way, all my experiences are like that. Every experience, there's consciousness, which is untouched by, and you say there's consciousness and something else. In your dream, is there you and dream? As the individual in the dream, there's you in the dream world. But when I look back to it, there's only me in the dream. There isn't multiplicity in the dream. The multiplicity is just an idea. So each experience I have, there's the awareful being, and name and form, some sound, some taste, some thought, some emotion, some whatever else. But all that is, I look back to it, it's I, the awareful being. Is there the awareful being and other things? No, there's the awareful being and these appear in it, like this. You know, you do the exercises we did with the dream. We talked about any experience in past or projection for futures in your mind is the same as the dream. So it's you and that's it. You're only left with the present moment. And if I drop my whole ideas of past, I drop all these things, the present moment also, I'm aware and everything else appears in it. To make it, give it some other solid reality, I need to bring the past into it. I need to bring time, but the time, that's just my mind. I have to put it aside, it's conditioning. But in any case, so as we strip everything from the experience, all the unessential, the name and form, then it becomes easier to appreciate that there isn't, the multiplicity isn't substantial like this. So this is what happens. And also with the Dvaita Vargita, there will be some sort of divisions. There has to be some division in order for there to be multiplicity. We'll go more into that when we do the external. We'll just mention them now. We've studied them in the past in other texts. We'll just mention that. We'll go more in detail later. So when you have divisions, there are a few kinds of division. One is called the division within the same kind of group, Sajatiya Bheda, within the same group. We're a group of people here. So there's a division, right? There's men, there's women. There's ones in America, ones in other country. There's, you know, there's ones that have glasses, ones that don't have glasses. We can make all sorts of divisions in the group. So in this way. So within a group, you make divisions like this. So now you have the gold and you have the ornaments. Yeah, this ornament is long, it's a chain. This one is very small, it's a nose ring. You know, all these things. But no, the difference between that and the gold. Oh no, there's no difference between that and the gold. So between the name and form, the differences. Between the ornaments and the gold, what difference is there? So you have to have some name and form to have those differences. And then you have vijatiya bheda between different categories, right? You have a dog and you have a cat. So there's a difference. They're different species. So you'll see differences between the species like this. So now you'll say, okay, again, if we took the so there you have, but again, when you have the substance of the consciousness and the objects, you can't really have that because they're not at the same level. It's kind of like snake and rope, you and the dream. It's not two separate things that you can say this is separate. It's like comparing gold to ornament, what I said before. That would be more of that kind of division. And last division, swagata bheda, within oneself. Yes, just myself. Within myself, there are differences too. There's right and left, right? There's head and there's feet, right? There's mouth, there's ears, all these things, all differences within me. But in consciousness, show me some separation difference in the consciousness, like take space. Show me this the differences in the space. Oh yeah, this is American space, this is Indian space, this is, this is Canadian space. So now American Canadian space, totally separate. This is Greenland space. This is Australia space. What do you mean? No, this is space in my house, the space outside the house. That's your house. It's not the space. So in the space, there's no differences. One space, right? One unchanging space. There's no division in it. We superimpose divisions on it. So I'm a conscious being. You'll say, oh yeah, inside, outside. Inside, outside, you're aware of inside, outside. That's again, you're superimposing on the consciousness. What do you mean? So within the consciousness, no divisions like this. This is also helps with this Dvaita Vargita, with Advaita. And we'll delve more into it soon, okay? Just since we're pointing out here about Advaita, like this. So this is what's this, using the words of the scriptures as pointers to it. And the pointer, again, is more dropping things than adding things to it. This is one of the main things like this. And what happens is, an interesting thing, people say, well, Vedanta, you just study and that's it. Yeah, we are studying these things for understanding, but now try to see this, that within my day-to-day life, to see these things, right? Try slowly shifting my attention from nama rupa base to the substance base. Try to see I'm all caught up in things, what's happening, but oh yeah, I am. The other things are there. I am is the important thing. I am this, I am that. That's just some temporary manifestation. There's a lot of work that one can do there, you know, because I understand some in the mind, but then I have to look at it. Helps me how to look at my experiences of my life in a different light. So this is the practice, this is the Nididhyasana in my life. So it is something. What practice can you do? It's not that you'll go have a certain place, you know, do an exercise, this exercise or that. You can sit and meditate on it too, but what about my day-to-day life when I get caught up in things? It helps me to bring these to mind and bring to mind it's not a thought, but then to observe, oh, this is see the things in this light. So this is a tremendous sadhana, a tremendous practice like this. And it's so in the end, it's a practice of understanding. When I understand that, then it helps to free from so much, really just free from all the stuff. That is samsara, all the stuff that I have, that I think I have, I superimpose, if you want, myself like this. So this is the second type of samadhi, second type of meditation brought up here, okay? Let's look at the third one also, pointed out in the next verse here.
Svanubhutirasaveshat Drishyashabdanupekshituhu.
Those reading the Sanskrit, there's an extra va there. Drishyashabdanupekshituhu, that va in the middle is a mistake. It's a typo, so you can ignore that. So read one more time from the beginning, because I just noticed that here.
Svanubhutirasaveshat Drishyashabdanupekshituhu Nirvikalpasamadhisyat Nivatasthitadipavat Svanubhutirasaveshat Drishya shabdanupekshituhu nirvikalpas samadhisyat nivatasthitadipavat.
That type was just in the Devanagari, the Sanskrit, not in the English letters. The person who disregards cognized things, or drishya, and the words, or shabda, has nirvikalpas samadhi from the complete absorption in true I, that is at once knowledge, principle, and happiness. This absorbed mind, like a lamp placed in a calm, windless space, is like a lamp, like that. So Shri Krishna says that, gives the example of the lamp in the Gita, in a windless place. Now, what happens is when anything you do regularly get absorbed in, slowly it also becomes effortless. So if you do this, it becomes more and more effortless, so the absorption becomes more natural, right? Anybody who meditates regularly sees that it becomes habit, it's easier to do. When I used to be at the Shivananda Center in New York, every day, 6 o'clock, the meditation half hour, and then chanting and everything, every day for years. So then I noticed, if there's a day that I'm not there, I have to go to the airport or pick somebody up from there or something, that time of day, the mind naturally is in a meditative mood, quiet, because of that, like that. So in this way, the habit is built up. Now, we gave the example last week of the pole vaulter. The pole vaulter, you run, pushes on the pole, and then eventually we'll drop the pole. So here, the pole, we hold on to something with the experience in our first, what is experienced in the first type of the Nirvikalpa Samadhi, and then with the words of the scriptures like this. Here now that's dropped. Now, of course, if I just drop it, then mine might just be going everywhere. So what actually when you're absorbed, to some extent one can drop. This is actually just technique, because not that each one of these has to just be done on their own. I'm just there and present. Now the mind is getting out of it, so you go back and use it again. You use it as needed like this. That's how somebody can do it. Now, the important thing here is to remember also, Nirvikalpa Samadhi is not the goal here. In yoga, maybe they put it as goal. Here, it's not the goal. This is Nididhyasana. It's a practice in order to solidify the clarity that of this knowledge that I'm the awareful being. I'm not the changing phenomena. So if I'm absorbed, very good. If I'm not absorbed, well, I can still notice that as well, because I can notice that, you know, I'm the awareful being supporting the experiences. Okay, so the other ones help to prepare, and then you get absorbed. And then if you're not absorbed, you again prepare so for the absorption. Again, the absorption happens and goes, but it's not the essence like this. Okay, in this way. So that's not what we're looking at like this. Now, what happens though is, okay, now it says in a place where it's windless. Right? Now you see the leaves moving, that's one thing. I look outside, the leaves are moving a little bit on the tree. But they're moving because of the wind. So when I sit quietly, I want to just be present, but the mind is moving. Some of the time gently like now, or 2 days ago when it was stormy, it was moving around a lot. So some of the time you meditate, the mind is a little running here and there. Some of the time, it's all over the place, right? Like that. Naturally, that's what happens. I'll tell you a very good thing. As yogi, Raja Yoga, it's always a struggle because some days you're absorbed, some not. Vedanta, no problem. You're free from that problem because that's not the goal. Of course, if the mind is too unruly, then yoga helps, because otherwise hard to meditate, but that's not the problem. But now, what happens is, why are the leaves moving? Because of the wind. Why is the mind moving? Because of the wind. What is the wind? Right? The wind here, raga dvesha, my likes, dislikes. Those are born of attachment. Because I'm sitting here, I'm meditating, and nothing's happening now. It's quiet early morning. But there's something going on at work that I'm worried about has to be done. What'll happen if it's not in place? Then that, you know, if it doesn't work out, what'll they say about me, or what'll happen? Now mind is disturbed, right? I'm looking forward to something. Oh, I'm really looking forward. Next week I'll go away and it's going to be so liking. I like that. My mind is that. Likes and dislikes are pushed. That wind is pushing the mind. The attachment to those is pushing the mind like this. Something else happens even more serious. But it's not something that I care about as much like this. So what happens then is, yeah, I'm more detached from it, so it's not disturbing my meditation. Maybe I feel bad for the people, happen to them, and I help, whatever. But it doesn't disturb as much, because not the identity, the attachment isn't there. So that's what's really causing it. That's why in yoga you have Yama Niyama comes before you go to the controlling mind, focusing mind. Because you want to lessen the Raga Dvesha, lessen the wind, otherwise it's, you know, you can forcefully quiet the mind, but it'll keep getting pushed by these things because you're not going to the source of it, okay? So this is what happens is, yes, then the wind is blowing here and there, so the mind is in a windless place. You have to take the wind out of the sails by having raga dvesha less. You do the other way. That's why also the first practice that was given helps to take a lot of the wind out of the sails. Of course, over time, with understanding, more and more I know I'm the one who's I'm the sakshi, which brings the mind to light. I'm not that individual the mind thinks itself to be. Then that unravels a lot of this. I can loosen the identity, so then easier to absorb, because that's not pulling me as much. And actually, you meditate, you're absorbed, but certain things disturb, pull me out here or there. Those are those You know, those are based on these, on what I'm identifying with, what I'm holding on to that pulls me away, pulls me out of it like this. So this is what happens, okay? So what happens, so this is one thing. This is one thing, why the, why it's, what is the wind? What is causing this, right? I can blame the external, but that's not going to help, right? I can maybe, you know, pour out my, it maybe helps to speak and pour out all the stuff and helps to quiet, you know, get it off my chest. That's nice, but it doesn't totally solve the raga dvesha thing yet. So that's the raga dvesha. I have to look at it and understand. Mm-hmm. Understand likes, dislikes. What are they? Why are they? You know, why do I need? You know, I have to analyze. I have to do the inquiry. Then also that there are other obstacles that get in the way. There's tamasic obstacles. Like I sit to meditate and it's a very nice time to start dozing off. The mind likes to doze off like this. This is also you sit quietly to meditate. Oh, and then so this is tamasic. The mind is used to, is, you know, gets into that. That's why years that I've been teaching lunch hour meditation at work, I noticed this long time before. And so in the kind of blurb about it, says that please, you know, suggest it to have your lunch after the class. Because if you eat just before, then you come. Then what happens? Because then it makes the mind heavy, you know, it's heavier like this. So there's tamasic things in the mind that makes it more. Then you have rajasic things in the mind. The disturbances we talked before, the mind is very busy, wanting to run here or there, right? Worried about things, expecting things, all this cause rajas in the mind. So how's the mind going to meditate then, right? That's why actually for just a meditation practice early morning or evening like this, it's the best time because it's the time where naturally we're not as busy. Nowadays, you know, the way technology is, hard to get away from the busyness, but naturally, especially just get up, you wash up, you're fresh, you're not busy with anything yet, it's the best time. But for Nididhyasana, many times is good, of course. So the busyness of the mind like this. Now you have the sattvic also. The sattvic thing, very interesting with that. I'm meditating. Oh, I'm absorbed nicely. It's so wonderful, right? I'm enjoying it. Now that I'm enjoying it, that is, I'm enjoying the bliss of meditation. That's sattvic, right? If I'm enjoying the bliss of meditation, it's not me, it's an experience. Where is that experience within me? Where does it belong within the within, it's not the body. That's why, because it's beyond body, beyond mind. It's so, so wonderful. Because it's from the reflection of the bliss which I am. So it's the Anandamaya Kosha, the reflection of the bliss. So I get stuck there that I enjoy it so much I want to stay with that. But then I'm stuck in experience where what I am is beyond that experience. So it takes vairagya to let go. I'm not the enjoyer. I'm not bhokta. I am karta. I'm the doer will bring rajas because action is rajas. So I have to drop that. I'm not bhokta. I'm not the experiencer, the enjoyer. Otherwise I get stuck there that I'm just enjoying that meditation. Oh, let me stay with that. Let me enjoy it. Where then? That's also getting stuck in a subtler place like this. Okay, so that's what happens with this. And what happens is, when the mind is quiet, naturally that reflects. Naturally, the bliss that I am is reflecting in the mind because the disturbances aren't there, like a clear reflection in the water. So naturally that will come around. That's probably why children are just playing and so by nature more joyful because they don't have all that stuff in the mind in order to murkier and busier to disturb that reflection. So it's naturally there, just it gets obscured by all these things, by my ignorance about myself and by my projected ideas. They help to cover it up so then it's not clear, to obscure the vision. That's all. That's why I'm quiet. Oh, how nice it is. So once these are dropped, then I'm just in that. That's wonderful. So this is the nirvikalpa, because there's no prop anymore like that. Okay. So this is what these help, the other ones help to bring towards that. And as we said, yes, then I'm just absorbed in that. And again, as we said, these are different practices. They're practices, they're not the goal, right? Nididhyasana practice, not the goal that I have to get to this type of samadhi. I need to get to something, then the rajas. I don't need to get to anything. I am. Then I say, oh, but I'm worried. Okay, let me look into it. Am I worried? Or am I? Oh, I'm aware of that worry. That worry. Okay, that worry is there. Very good. I am. Then I'm absorbed and I am. Wonderful, I am. Something else comes up if I get, I notice it, you know. Oh, yeah. Then am I that? Or does that belong to just, you know, to the mind? It belongs to the mind. Within my light, the mind comes to light. I'm not that. So in this way, it's a practice for helping to establish my view from as Sakshi and not as the individual, like that. So I'll continue with this next time. Let's finish here for today. Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Before we finish for today, if any questions, anything, we can discuss them a bit. If there's a question, then whose question is it? But if there are questions, we can discuss. Mm-hmm. Very good. So, we heard these things, you know, now do some Nididhyasana, especially the first two kinds, because actually it's good if you practice these, and then questions can come up about them too. Especially when the iron is hot, right? It just pointed out, you know, then, you know, try during the week, do some meditations on this, everything, so that, you know, it's it's pointed out a little bit like this, you take some time to do the meditation on it. Okay. Very good. So have a very good week, and we'll continue next time. Okay.
Thank you.